Hey, it's Weasel. You're listening to Talk Today's Top and Trendy Technology Topics every Tuesday and Thursday with Adam Lepp, the computer guy, between 2:13 p.m. and 3 right here on The Talking Place, WWGH 107.1.
When you need to talk technology, no one gets you more gigs in your hard drive than Adam. It's time for Adam the Computer Guy with Adam Lepp.
Yes, it is I, Adam Lepp, the computer guy, with my twice-weekly show all about technology. Although sometimes we talk about current events or music or TV trivia or maybe a topic that will surprise even myself. That's all part of the fun of live radio. Looks like a nice late spring day outside. Seasonable high around 80. Mostly sunny skies, excellent radio listening weather, cruise around in the convertible with the top down and the radio volume up. I can assure you that your brain cells and your ears will be very thankful. We get together every Tuesday and Thursday between approximately 2:13 p.m. and 3 Eastern time to talk about tech and, again, sometimes other topics of interest. Later in the show, we will bring back the gentleman who's often with me on my Monday morning show, Dr. Ron Feinman, to talk about presidential insults. I'm going to have the author of the Presidential Insults book, Mr. Mike Purdy, on with me later in the month. But again, as a presidentologist and yours truly being a president enthusiast, of course, most importantly, being an American, we are quite intrigued by the potty mouth, not just of the current president, but of all presidents, and things that presidents have said about one another that oftentimes they couldn't even say in polite company. And a new book about that, 101 Presidential Insults, is coming out officially on Friday the 7th, which you can purchase on Amazon. It's a paperback book, just under 100 pages, by, again, Mike Purdy, who's based out of the Seattle area. Dr. Feinman and I will be discussing that book, giggling about some of the presidential insults and providing some of our own perspective on the contents of said publication. That's coming up a little later in this show as a special treat for you. First, though, we're going to talk about a new iPod from our friends at Apple in Cupertino, California, and also the United States Postal Service and other companies using self-driving trucks to help in their day-to-day operations. It's having a pilot program in the southwestern part of the country between Texas, New Mexico, and Arizona. So nothing directly in this area, but I'm sure in time we may see this technology and method of logistics in the great Midwest that we call home. And you can always send me an email on our private email server. Be happy to hear what you have to say. Comments, questions, suggestions, complaints, always welcome. Adam@WWGH1071.com. Haven't heard too much about the iPod lately, but in late May, Apple refreshed its iPod Touch line of media players. Improve the processor, storage capacity, and communications features. The new iPod has the A10 Fusion chip, which is also used in the very familiar iPhone 7. Apple says the power upgrade delivers 2 times faster performance than previous models and 3 times better graphics. The last generation of iPods came out 4 years ago. Time continues to fly. 32 gigabyte and 128 gigabyte model are available. $199 for the 32 gigabyte, $299 for the 128, or if you want to really be fancy, a 256 gigabyte version that'll set you back $399. And they can be ordered at the Apple website in the States. 6 colors: pink, silver, space gray, gold, blue, and red. Has the latest version of Apple's mobile operating system, which is iOS 12, FaceTime, and all kinds of other fun features. And by the way, there is an earphone jack, which we've talked about. Apple has removed that from other devices, much to people's chagrin, including mine. I felt that was a very bad step, making the device too proprietary and territorial. But with the earphone jack back, that has certainly improved the flexibility of the device and making it compatible with hardware that people would tend to have and use and like to use. Kevin Kruel, expert in the field from Turios Research, he said the Apple iPod Touch is an incremental bit of business for Apple. It uses an older, but still very capable, A10 processor. Again, it's like what's in the iPhone 7, not the current model, but a fairly recent one. The amount of engineering required to refresh the iPod Touch was minimal. Apple can use existing technology and manufacturing infrastructure to build these devices, which helps to keep price points low and margins at a reasonable level. And that's from Andreas Scherer from Salto Partners in Reston, Virginia. Games are a big factor behind the latest iPod refresh. And that's from another expert, Maria Rua Aguete. That's a good name. Executive Director for Media Service Providers and Platforms at IHS Market in London. She said the new iPod Touch is optimized for gaming, including immersive augmented reality experiences. That sounds like fun. Apple's team has added more immersive features to its augmented reality, including shared and persistent augmented reality, image detection, and much more. So what does all that mean? That's even beyond what I understand. Well, it makes it possible for this new iPod Touch to bring 3D objects like toys and sculptures to life. The iOS is the largest gaming platform in the world, according to Apple. They plan to expand the platform with Apple Arcade later this year. Arcade will be a subscription service with more than 100 new games that can be played online or offline without advertising or the need for online purchases. Apple's decision to move up the game's value chain with a new curated subscription service, as well as to support the development of exclusive games for its arcade platform, is a significant escalation of its commitment to the games market. Microsoft, Facebook, Google, Amazon, and other fancy and rich and big companies like those four have also invested directly in games content and services. The commitments by those companies underline the importance of the games market as a central pillar of the broader entertainment opportunity. The games industry is huge, and these companies are making it a pillar of their broadband internet strategy. And again, that comes from Maria Rua Aguita from IHS Market in London. Now, with Arcade, Apple has identified a gap in the market for a curated subscription product that supports unique and exclusive content. It's not monetized through ads or other methods and is suitable to specific demographics, including younger players, families, and a cross-section of users who like to play premium games. Ross Rubin from Reticle Research in New York City, another person who knows a lot about this stuff, said for parents who might not want their kids to have access to cellular technology, the iPod could be the kind of standalone product that they've been looking for. Parents who hesitate at buying an iPhone for their kids will be happy to give them a good $199 device that allows them to play popular games. Breaking in kids on an iPod can have another benefit for Apple. There are numerous apps available that provide calling capabilities, assuming a Wi-Fi connection is available. In that case, the iPod becomes an on-ramp to an iPhone purchase down the road. The latest refresh of the iPod could be an effort to create a kind of low-cost alternative to the iPhone, according to David McQueen from ABI Research in Oyster Bay, New York. With iPhones now having higher and higher price points, Perhaps it is the ubiquity of Wi-Fi and the abilities of FaceTime that could turn these latest iPods into viable, low-cost options to Apple's mobile device stable. The problem with that strategy is the competition. Demand for devices like the iPod has deteriorated massively over the past 3 to 5 years due to the growth in the lower cost and very versatile Android smartphones. And I speak from my own experience. I don't need an iPod because my Android phone does essentially what an iPod does. No offense, but that's kind of how it is. And you don't need to have four different devices when you can have one that does pretty much everything that the four can handle. Not to mention the cost, not having to lug these products around. So Apple does have to regroup just a little bit. The Android devices now come with increasing sizes of onboard memory, expandable memory slots, access to music and video services like Spotify over wireless networks that have created appealing value alternatives. Set against the price of an iPhone, these iPods may be viewed as a way to hit a new lower-tier market segment and improve Apple's addressable market. The problem is that the majority of that low-cost sector has been taken up by the Android devices, which can do all the iPod can do and more. Also, if you have an iPod, you probably need to take a smartphone out with you too, which defeats the purpose just a little bit. The product's future is still uncertain, even as these iPods start hitting shelves. Ross Rubin said, given the gap between the iPod Touch and the last one, the question about this iPod, as it was about the last one, is will this one be the last? Well, we'll find out. Can Apple, like any technology company, even a company as big and powerful as they are, does need to regroup sometimes and needs to look at what their focus is, what do they need to sell, what do they need to improve on, and remain competitive, remain profitable. And that's a good example of something that they need to keep in mind. Adam Lepp here, the computer guy, with news and views on The Talking Place, WWGH Radio, all about technology in your pocket, in your car, automation, and anything and everything in between. We talk about autonomous vehicles, self-driving cars and trucks a lot on this show. Well, what does the U.S. Post Office have to say about that? How about having a driverless vehicle deliver your mail or transport your mail? That certainly could be interesting. Maybe if I had a robot deliver my mail, it would come a little bit sooner or on a more consistent time. Who knows? Well, in May, the U.S. Postal Service announced a pilot project using self-driving trucks. It'll conduct the 2-week experiment in collaboration with TuSimple. That's TuSimple, an autonomous driving tech company in San Diego. TuSimple's contract with the Postal Service calls for one of the company's self-driving trucks to make 5 road trips hauling USPS trailers between Dallas and Phoenix. So not in this part of the country, but on the western part of our great land. Although the truck's operation will be automated, humans won't be left out of the picture entirely. A safety engineer and driver will be aboard to monitor vehicle performance and maintain public safety. Cargo will travel along the I-10, I-20, and I-30 corridor through Texas, Arizona, and New Mexico, a route that accounts for about 60% of the total economic activity in the United States. That corridor has also certain advantages for automated vehicles, according to Robert Brown, Director of Public Affairs for TuSimple. He said, "You're not going to see us on I-90. We can handle high winds, darkness, and rain, but we have not mastered snow yet." So they're staying in the Southwest, where the weather is fairly warm most of the time, even in the winter. But again, I-90, where they might be through New England or northern Ohio, they're not ready for that snow challenge yet. This pilot program, again, using an autonomous truck, a self-driving truck with a human there for backup if needed by the United States Postal Service, it's one of the many ways that the Postal Service is innovating and investing in its future. according to spokesperson Kim Frum. We are conducting research and testing as part of our efforts to operate a future class of vehicles that will incorporate new technology to accompany a diverse mail mix, enhance safety, improve service, reduce emissions, and produce operational savings. Long-haul routes with short turnaround time, such as the 22-hour journey in the pilot program, are well-suited for self-driving trucks. According to Robert Brown, again, an executive there at Too Simple, he said, right now, human drivers are constrained by 11 hours a day. We can stretch that out within these with these trucks. One of the biggest challenges facing Too Simple now is finding teams to accompany its automated trucks. Overnight requirements and close quarters are not an attractive combination, especially in the middle of a truck driver's shortage. The American Trucking Association estimates that the truck driving shortage, 175,000 by 2024. So, unlike some occupations, truck drivers are at a premium. The unemployment is negative. There are not enough truck drivers to do all the work that's needed. So why would you, as a big company or an organization like the post office, want to add vehicles without a human doing the driving? Well, again, there are multiple sides to that story, like there always seems to be. Again, he said, right now we have a truck driver on the left seat and a safety engineer riding right seat. Eventually, we'll be able to pull those folks out. Of course, other things when you have a human driver, sleeping, bathroom breaks, breaks to get a cup of coffee, etc. Autonomous trucks can reduce costs and improve speed and efficiency for the Postal Service. According to Eric Javerbaum, CEO of Eric Ho Communications, E-R-E-C-I-H-O, either Eric Ho or Eric Ho, kind of a play on words there with his name. They're a public relations firm in New York City. He said, unlike human drivers hauling freight across a region as large as the American Southwest, where this is being tested, computers don't need sleep, food, or bathroom breaks. There are also legal limits on how much a commercial driver can drive in one day, which in modern 18-wheelers are enforced by computer and GPS tracking. Finding a way to move freight across state lines without those friction points is sort of a holy grail of logistics, so we're looking at both faster delivery and a higher capacity pipeline, which means more freight delivered even more quickly, assuming this pilot program goes well. Sam Abuel-Samid from Navigant Research, a market research and advisory company in Colorado, said, safety is also a big benefit of self-driving vehicles. Automation doesn't get fatigued or distracted. In the near term, highway driving will be one of the main areas tackled by automation of heavy-duty vehicles. However, these systems will likely still require human operators in urban areas. Automation could be triggered for a long highway run, and then a human driver may take over when the truck exits the highway to provide last-mile operation. Humans will likely remain involved loading and unloading and other functions at depots. At the moment, conditions favor labor in the trucking market. There's a shortage of drivers. Again, almost 200,000 drivers shortage by 2024 is the estimate. That's just 5 years away. In this climate, self-driving trucks can fill the gaps created by those shortages. However, that won't always be the case, as the efficiency and cost effectiveness of autonomous vehicles begins to show itself, we can absolutely expect layoffs. They're likely to occur first in response to new companies that use autonomous vehicles at the outset, and second, as companies become unable to compete while still providing their drivers with any benefits at all. The effect on jobs may not be too severe, though. In local urban applications, the drivers may be displaced, but there will likely still be people on board for many years to handle the last 100-foot problem of actually delivering products to people's doors. As e-commerce grows, the net job losses may end up being a wash. Meanwhile, the Partnership for Transportation Innovation and Opportunity, which focuses on the impact of autonomous vehicles on workers, voiced support for projects like the United States Postal Service and Too Simple Pilot. Members include some pretty big players: Daimler, the American Trucking Association, Lyft, Uber, Ford, FedEx, Toyota, and Waymo. Among the key questions: how will the introduction of autonomous vehicles impact the role of the worker? How will their role stay the same, and how will they evolve? What new career opportunities will still be available? With focused efforts, workers are supported as communities transition to an AV feature, autonomous vehicle feature. Of course, AV also stands for audiovisual, which is more in my field, but in this case, AV is audio. No, it's autonomous vehicles. See, AV is kind of like CD, because CD could stand for compact disc, cross-dresser, or certificate of deposit. Kind of fun when an acronym means several different things. Of course, as beneficial and innovative and economical as an autonomous vehicle can be, they're also vulnerable. Vandalism is a real threat. If malicious actors decide to spray paint or smash the sensors, which are so important for the autonomous vehicle to know where it's going, it could disable the autonomous vehicle. Cybersecurity is also a real issue, since automated vehicles will all be connected. There's always the potential that bad actors may find a way to attack either the vehicles or the corresponding data centers to cause issues, either for monetary gain or to create havoc. Luddites that decide to simply step out in front of an autonomous vehicle could also bring things to a halt, although that's something that can happen now with a human-driven vehicle. So, interesting news for you from the world of technology, and that's how we roll here on The Talking Place, WWGH Radio. On the Adam the Computer Guy radio program, we often talk about technology, but sometimes we like to go off on a tangent because I'm so good at it and talk about other topics, and they all kind of relate to technology anyway, because the whole world is kind of controlled by technology in some fashion. That would include our president, who likes to tweet at 2 or 3 in the morning. That includes news that you can get from social media, from news websites, from TV and radio. And of course, the best way to learn about the world around us is listen to talk radio stations, especially independent ones like this one, WWGH, The Talking Place. And I am pleased to have with me someone who's on the air with us quite a bit. His dulcet tones are often a welcome addition to the airwaves, Dr. Ron L. Fineman, for something a little bit different. Now, Ron, thanks for joining me on this program, where we're going to be a little of a different course of events than we often do. A mutual acquaintance of ours, Ron, Mike Purdy, who, like yourself,
yes, I'm very happy to be on. Thank you very much for inviting me. Yes, I've met Mike Purdy when he came down to South Florida. He's a delightful person, and we had an interesting lunch and a great discussion about our common factor that we are both presidentologists, as you call it.
Word that I've coined, presidentologist. He is also a presidentologist, and someone who's a walking encyclopedia of the great U.S. presidency. And like myself, he is an aficionado of humor, of not taking himself or other people too seriously. And he went ahead and wrote a book about that. Now, Mike and I will be talking about him and himself and his book when Ron goes on sabbatical later in the month for a couple weeks. But I wanted to give folks a preview and kind of make our own impressions of this book. Again, it's called 101 Presidential Insults. It'll be available on Amazon later in June, so please go ahead and reserve it. Purchase it. Go to Mike's website, presidentialhistory.com, to learn more about the book. It's a small book, actually just 78 pages, paperback, so it's inexpensive, and it's worth every nickel. as I mentioned.
And the title is 101 Presidential Insults, What They Really Thought About Each Other and What It Means to Us.
Not surprisingly, Ron, Mike Purdy came to you as another presidential scholar and asked for a review of the book as well as quotes about your experience as a fellow presidentologist or presidential historian. Let me try to give the edited version. You write on the second page of the book, Mike Purdy, a prolific presidential historian, has come up with a new angle about the presidency. This book demonstrates that other presidents, before the age of Twitter and mass audiences and round-the-clock news media, were quite competitive in their insults of other presidents historically and in retrospect. Bottom line is, Ron, I think even you are surprised that Donald Trump is not the only president who uses language that you wouldn't want to say in front of your five-year-old child or in front of a lady or really in front of anybody without washing your mouth out with soap and water after you say it. Now, things have changed. There was no Twitter in the time of Abraham Lincoln or George Washington or even Ronald Reagan. But what presidents have had to say hasn't changed that much. It's just the way that they say it. In fact, if you look on the cover of this book, it's hard to look at this cover without laughing. You see a large head and some blonde hair. It kind of looks like a broom. And some small hands holding a little cell phone. Of course, that's Donald Trump. You also see a nice caricature of one of my favorite presidents, Richard Nixon, John Kennedy. I believe Theodore Roosevelt and Harry Truman are the other people on the cover. So the artwork is absolutely outstanding, and I do want to give a credit where credit is due to the extremely talented artist Victor Juhasz. Hopefully I'm pronouncing his name right. Victor, you are an outstanding artist, and I just love that photo. It is so amusing, especially Donald Trump with his tuft of blonde hair and his little hands on his phone. Again, giggles with a capital G. Bottom line is, Ron, this book, in just under 80 pages, is one that lists chronologically quotes that presidents have made about other presidents. And again, if you think that Donald Trump is the only president who is outspoken, you would be very sadly mistaken. In fact, I have to kind of edit some of these passages because they really aren't something that I want to say on the air. Let's start, Ron, with one that's relatively mild. Like yourself, Ron, former President Woodrow Wilson is a doctor of philosophy in the humanities business. He was a college administrator before becoming president. But that doesn't mean that he wasn't one not to be the target of insults. One of my favorite presidents, Theodore Roosevelt, said about Dr. Woodrow Wilson, the lily-livered skunk in the White House. And by that, he said, Wilson may not be able to prevent Germany from kicking us into war. And that was a letter to, I love this name, Kermit Roosevelt. I didn't know Theodore Roosevelt had a son named Kermit. Of course, we think about the frog, but, you know, Kermit's actually kind of a nice name. So a letter he wrote to Theodore Roosevelt wrote to his son, Kermit Roosevelt, 12 years ago, 102 years ago, March 1st of 1917. And that's, again, really one of the most mild-mannered quotes that we see in the book. Hitting home, Warren Harding, of course, one of Marion's most favorite former residents, about, again, the aforementioned Dr. Woodrow Wilson, he has unmistakable flights of mental disturbance. Now, Ron, why would somebody from the mild-mannered city of Marion, Ohio, say that about a president with a PhD who's obviously pretty smart? He has unmistakable flights of mental disturbance. Why would somebody say that about Dr. Woodrow Wilson?
Well, I think because Wilson was a very stubborn individual and very self-righteous. He was pretty obnoxious, and he wanted everybody to think his way, which is not unique to him, but I think that's part of it. But the thing that's so sad is that Harding is saying this, and it wasn't known publicly at the time, 2 days after Wilson suffered his stroke that paralyzed him for the rest of his time in office. So it's not very nice when a president just suffered a stroke to have someone who's thinking of running for president, not yet announced and not running, to make a comment like this that they found that he made that statement. That's not very nice. And Harding, I never really thought of Harding as someone who would be that way. You know, he sort of seems like a pretty gentle, decent kind of a man, not very bright, but somehow you would think someone who would not say things like this. But apparently we have found, I guess, correspondence where he says this.
Well, of course, Wilson got back at him. You know, if you say something, you, as my mom would say, you can dish it out, but you can't dish it in. Wilson said about Harding to his friend Cleveland Dodge, a businessman and lifelong friend and financial backer. He called Harding a fool of a president. And that's kind of mild considering yes. some of the things that other presidents
Well, because he saw that that Harding really wasn't up to the intellectual standards that Wilson himself was, because Harding was not very smart. He's one of the mediocre presidents. Unfortunately, that's where your station is named after in that city, Marion, Ohio. But Harding is not a shining star in the White House.
Now, Jimmy Carter, who is our oldest living president, and it's been almost 40 years since he's been president, and maybe he's listening, because, you know, we do broadcast all over the world. So, Jimmy, if you and your lovely wife, Rosalyn, and I always liked his daughter, Amy, if you're listening, you may want to cover your ears, because you may not want me to hear me say this. But what did Ronald Reagan say about President Carter on the campaign trail in 1980? I'm not sure if I can say this on the air. So if you don't hear us on the air next week, you know that I said something I shouldn't. But Reagan, and my dad likes this word, Ron. So again, I can't say this with a straight face. This is one of my father's favorite words. But Ronald Reagan called Jimmy Carter a little schmuck. I guess you can say schmuck, right? So I get, you know, Reagan is taller than Carter. He's one of our tallest presidents. So who knows about the
Carter's
about the
like 5'7", yes.
Yeah, little schmuck, but... okay, well, I'm sorry, yeah, Jimmy, if you had to hear that.
Jimmy Carter calls Gerald Ford, who actually was someone he became friendly with years after they both competed, he called him a sanctimonious hypocrite. Well, actually, Ford called Carter a sanctimonious hypocrite during the 76 campaign, and yet years later, he had it set up that Carter would speak at his funeral, give a eulogy. So people make comments, and then later they overcome it. So you got to give credit to that, for Gerald Ford.
Again, there are several dozen pages of insults. I'm just picking some, and I'm going to concentrate, because we have limited time here, on the recent presidents. Richard Nixon about George Bush number one. Comment to Monica Crowley, his research assistant, about 28 years ago. The mushy moderate. Now, that's interesting, Ron, because Nixon was a moderate. As we talked about, he is to the left of a lot of Democrats. He was an environmentalist. Again, he didn't have some of the socially conservative views that we think about with many Republicans, Pence obviously being one that comes to mind. Why would he have said that about George Bush number one, calling him a mushy moderate? Was it to indicate that he was to the left of Reagan, or what was
Tricky Dicky thinking? I think that's what it is, because he was a moderate and Reagan was really not. And I think Nixon thought of himself as a conservative, and he is basically seen as that, although now looking back he seems less conservative than conservatives are now.
Okay.
I also find it interesting, however, Nixon talks about Clinton. He calls him a pretty boy who doesn't quite have it together. He's a waffler and an opportunist. And then it turns out that's Nixon about Clinton. And then George H.W. Bush says about Clinton. And I remember hearing this at the time. He called Clinton during the campaign a bozo.
Well, I would say that Clinton is better looking than Nixon, so it was probably out of jealousy.
yeah, pretty boy, as Nixon calls him, talks about Clinton, a pretty boy. Flipping an opportunist, though, yeah.
And speaking of appearance, and again, I apologize, I'm insulting anybody, but this book, you know, you have to look at it with an open mind, and maybe a couple scotch and sodas, too. William H. Taft, we talk about his being overweight. I believe they had to make a special bathtub for him at the White House, right, because he was so portly. So Harry Truman called him a fat old man. And again, Teddy Roosevelt, I think he's one of my favorite presidents, not just because of his views and being that socially responsible, fiscal conservative that I tend to find myself liking. But he wasn't afraid to run his mouth, and he called William H. Taft a fathead. Well, it wasn't just his head that was overweight, but he called him a fathead, so that's okay. It happens.
I also find it interesting, Trump says about Bill Clinton in 2016, he's talking about Bill Clinton, he says, the worst abuse of women in U.S. political history. Is he looking in the mirror?
Well, you know, it takes one to know one, doesn't it? That's what I always said. And let's see here. Well, what else do we have here? There's, again, so many things to say. And as I mentioned, some of these really don't want to say on the radio. It's bad enough that I said schmuck. I guess I can get away with that.
Well, you realize if you look at what schmuck is, and it actually is probably a word that will be bleeped because it means a body part.
Yeah, well, that's okay. You know, we're still on the air here. So I guess it's not a big deal.
Yeah.
I don't claim to be perfect. So what did Harry Truman say about Franklin Roosevelt? He was the coldest man I ever met. He didn't give a, I don't want to say that word. You can say this on the air, but I don't like to say it. He didn't give a bleep bleep personally for me or you or anyone in the world as far as I could see. That really wasn't very, very nice, especially with Roosevelt having a disability. So was that typical of Truman? Was Truman, again, being from St. Louis, you're kind of Midwestern, you think he was polite? Was
Andrew
he
kind City, of actually, not.
Yeah, was Truman Kansas a rude City. Kind of a guy, or is that just something he said when he had a couple too many drinks?
Truman was very rude. Oh, my God. I'm not sure if it's in here about Nixon. He had horrible things to say about Congressman Nixon, who was attacking him about communism, and that he was soft on communism, Nixon was saying when he's the congressman. The two men hated each other. And then, of course, when Nixon became president, they realized there's one common thing between them other than both being president. They both played the piano, and Nixon brought out the Truman piano that was still in the White House to be at the Truman Library in Independence, Missouri, and he had to, of course, they met, and it was a very funny scene to see Truman in his mid-80s having to meet Nixon, who had just been elected and was doing this nice gift, but obviously he hated his guts, and you could just see he was not thrilled about having to stand there with Nixon, but Nixon did donate that piano to the, you know, to the Truman Library, which is still there.
People who think that Harry Truman was a gentleman are sadly mistaken. This book will open up your eyes. And as you can see already, Ron,
if we had to look at all of them, I think Truman and Teddy Roosevelt probably and Andrew Jackson were probably the most foul-mouthed, other than maybe recently with Trump and what he says. I think they really were. They're particularly so. Truman and T.R. and I think Jackson earlier really are probably the worst in that regard.
Right, but bottom line is Trump isn't, you know, I guess, ironically, good company with other presidents. As someone who does have a potty mouth and is outspoken and may not be a gentleman as often as he probably should be, let's get to someone you think would be a gentleman. We talked about the Bushes being kind of prim and proper, but we may have found that that isn't always the case. We would certainly think that John Kennedy was a man of much class. But with this quote, I think I may have to reconsider that. Here's what he said about Richard Nixon to his speechwriter, Richard Goodwin, about Nixon in the closing weeks of his 1960 campaign. A filthy, lying son of a, and I can't say that word, but it rhymes with switch, and a very dangerous man. Now, that was 13 years before Watergate, so that was well before anything happened. That might make Nixon be considered someone of low moral character. Before that, you know, as we talked about, Nixon was considered one of our greatest presidents, a foreign policy wizard, a wonderful environmentalist, and somebody with a lot of qualifications, and I think a very good speaker. So why, Ron, would John Kennedy say that about Nixon, a filthy, lying son of a you-know-what and a very dangerous man? How was Nixon dangerous in 1960?
Well, because he was the opponent of Kennedy in the race. You know, he wasn't saying this publicly, but, I mean, he was his opponent in the race. Interestingly, though, they both, Nixon and JFK, came to the House of Representatives at the same time, 1946 midterm elections, and the funny thing about it all is that when Nixon ran for the Senate in 1950, JFK gave him a campaign contribution against the Democratic nominee for that Senate seat, which I was astounded by to discover, but that's what happened. So people talk, and then they end up not always following through on what they say. They also were actually roommates in the sense that their offices at the Capitol building on Capitol Hill were next to each other by just chance because they were freshmen. So they actually were friends, but they were rivals too.
Yeah, we've seen a lot of kissing and making up. Now, understand, people are rivals, but they still have mutual respect. And we saw Biden and Obama, obviously, with president and vice president, and certainly Obama. I think I know whom he supports for the president in the 2020 election. And again, it happens. I remember, and I was much younger, we talked about this before, Ron, the election between Bush and Reagan. And again, I didn't understand how politics worked as well as I do now. But I remember asking my mom, these guys just hate each other in the debates and in the primary. And now suddenly they're best buddies and they're president and vice president. And it's like, well, yeah, you kiss and make up, but gosh, it just happens so quickly. And are they doing it because it's good for their ability to get elected? Or do they just have a change of heart or understand we can still shake hands and be friends, maybe not agree on everything, but if we join sides, you know, like a merger of rival companies, that it ends up being for the common good?
Yeah, probably both, but I think more the form of what you've said. But I want to point out Jimmy Carter, you know, we think of him as so nice. He says about Nixon, in 200 years of history, he's the most dishonest president we've ever had. I think he disgraced the presidency. I'm a longtime Nixon hater for way back. Imagine that he says in 1974.
Yeah,
Betty Ford's visit to Atlanta.
If you think that Carter was a southern gentleman,
apparently.
You have to rethink that, as this book really is an eye-opener. Again, we encourage you to look up this book. Go to the website presidentialhistory.com, a new book by Mike Purdy, 101 Presidential Insults. Mike and I will be on the air on this station later in this month. You don't want to miss it. But for now, Ron and I are tickling our funny bones by reading parts of this book. We've discussed a couple times, Ron, that recently deceased President George H.W. Bush and Bill Clinton kind of were best buddies, BFFs of sorts. They had a bit of a bromance.
They became so, yes.
Yeah.
But they were rivals in 92.
How it was, yeah. But they became such good friends, and that happens. People mellow as circumstances change. They both left office, and they didn't agree on everything, but they can agree to disagree and have respect for each other, which I think is good. They were both decent presidents. You know, I'm a pretty big Clinton fan. I wasn't a fan of his personal indiscretions, but the economy was very good when he was in office, and I think he was very smart. And, you know, I like Hillary, obviously, so, and many of his cabinet appointments, Madeleine Albright, for example. So many, many, of course, Mary Ellen Withrow, that goes without saying, staff appointment. So many things about Clinton that were excellent. And, you know, things evolve. George Bush coming off of a very popular two-term presidency of Reagan. So his job wasn't always that easy. But bottom line is, as we talked about earlier on our Monday show, in 1992, George Bush called Bill Clinton a bozo. Now, that really isn't too
like,
bad.
It just, earlier, yeah.
Yeah,
that
just
is funny.
Like
I
Bozo the Clown.
Saying but, that even. Yeah, but then, of course, years later, they became friends. Yes,
yeah, but it happens.
George W. Bush with Bill Clinton as well.
People are, they're rivals, and then they become friends, and you never know what may occur. So, we'll leave it at that, as we only scratch the surface of what this book says. So listeners, go out and buy this book. It's money well spent, and you will be laughing your funny bone off, that I can assure you.
Yes.
Just in closing, Ron, of course, we have all the former presidents have said something not so positive about our current president, Donald J. Trump. But let's fast forward 10 years from now when Trump has left office. Do you think that this BFF bromance of sorts that occurred and evolved between George Bush number one and Clinton, could that be something we might see between Obama and Trump? And, you know, Jimmy Carter, I'm sure he'll still be alive between Carter and Trump.
if he's alive, he'll be 104. Yeah, my God.
Clinton
I tend
and Trump.
To think likely.
Do you think that,
I don't think Carter will be around in 10 years, but I don't see Clinton, certainly not because of his wife. That will never happen. I don't see Obama and Trump ever having anything. Well, first of all, Obama doesn't say much, but I don't think Trump would ever say anything kind about Obama, even in the future. And I don't think Obama, he probably wouldn't say much negative, but he wouldn't say anything positive. I don't see it happening.
So,
and even with the Bushes, because he's been so vehemently against the Bushes. I'm talking about Trump. I tend to doubt it, but you know, history tells us, who can say, you know?
Yeah, so we may see a break in that rivals becoming friends, like Clinton and George H.W. Bush.
I hold my breath though, waiting for it. That's just
but you never know. We may be surprised.
No.
As I really was, I'm still kind of in shock by how close Mr. Bush number one and Bill Clinton were. They just always seem to be at opposite ends, but things happen. And, you know, Donald Trump.
Well, just like Carter and Ford got to be best of friends. They cut both couples after they both were out of office.
But your prediction, Ron, is 10 years from now, we're not going to see that friendship, that mutual respect between Trump and other living former presidents that we have seen with Clinton and Bush and others, for example.
I would not expect it, no. But you never know. You never know. Life is surprising. But it would have to be where Trump changed his attitude a little bit and maybe backed off on things he said. If he doesn't, it will not happen.
Yeah. All I can say is listen in 10 years, and we'll see if we were right. Well, thank you, Ron, for being with me on this segment of the Adam the Computer Guy radio program discussing interesting publication by a mutual acquaintance of ours, 101 Presidential Insults. And we shall talk again soon on The Talking
Mike
Place.
Mike Prudy, yes. Yes, thank you so much.
VH Radio.